The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. Good to have you with us. You join us on Tuesday's edition of the podcast. We're going to be looking ahead a little bit later on to some of the racing on Tuesday. Hopefully find a winner or two for you. Also going to be in discussion with James Millman a little bit later on in the podcast. He'll be chatting to us off the back of Betty's Hopes win, of course, over the course of the weekend at Newbury. So very much looking forward to that. But before all that, Sam Turner joins me on the podcast to tackle, first and foremost, the Monday jury, and then there'll be couple of selections for Tuesday a bit later on. Sam, how are you?
I'm very well, Sam. I think one of the questions on the Monday jury, what's James Millman going to spend his big share of that super sprint cash?
Yeah, indeed.
Probably a new car, knowing him. Yeah. wasn't even at Newbury, was he? But I bet it's put a smile on his face, that £122,000 cheque arriving through the door at Millman headquarters.
Yeah, definitely so. I can tell you, as we're going to hear it from James a little bit later on in the podcast, there's a bit of a difference of opinion, we'll put it that way, within the Millman family about how best to spend the cash. So I think James and Pat have got different ideas to what what Mum and Dad want to do with the money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad want to go on a long cruise. And the two youngsters, we'll bracket James as a youngster, probably want to go and buy some yearlings with him, no doubt.
You are very close to being bang on the money there. Yeah. Yes, we'll hear from James a little bit later on. We'll start Tuesday's podcast, though, as we always do, with a look through the Racing Post's Monday jury. And plenty of questions to go at this week, starting with, of course, Frankie Dettori, who was in classic winning action at the weekend. Sam won on Starcatcher on Saturday, of course, to land the Irish Oaks, then won another big pot on Sunday over in France with Ali winning the Prix Robert Papin. And the first question, not an easy one, I suppose. What's your favourite Frankie memory over the years? There'll be lots of them. I'm sure a lot of people, their favourite rides will be financially motivated. But yeah. What about you?
It's a slight difference whether it's your best Frankie memory or whether your most memorable Frankie ride.
Yes.
Frankie memory, probably the first time he kissed John Gosden and saw the look on John Gosden's face firsthand. That was quite a good one. Look, there's lots of sort of high-profile rides that Frankie's been responsible for that you've thought, crikey, that was brilliant. Tactically, he's so astute. He executes these front-running rides with such, exquisite beauty, really, and that was certainly the case over the weekend. I suppose Fujiyama Crest, that seventh leg of his Magnificent Seven at Ascot. Ascot's a track that he'll always be very much synonymous with. He's a magnificent rider around there, never seems to be in the wrong place whatsoever. And, Fujiyama Crest never won another race after that. Some will say, well, there's perhaps a few jockeys in that race that, could have been a little bit more alive to the situation. Certainly Pat Edry certainly was, because he absolutely battered the runner-up to try and get it past Frankie. There was no way that he was going to allow him to ride seven winners. But Fujiyama Crest ended up going into the point-to-point field for Sheila Crowe, struggling to win races. Which shows you just what a magnificent effort it was to actually get him to go forward and win that race at Ascot. And I thought that was such a memorable afternoon. Obviously, there's been a multitude of instances since where he's impressed in the saddle, thousands of them. But I think that with that pressure and what that meant that day, I thought that was an incredible ride, really. Mm. That was power, determination, and not just the Dettori finesse. That ride had everything.
Yeah, absolutely. On to the second question this week, which concerns one of his more recent winners, Starcatcher, as we mentioned, winning the Irish Oaks on Saturday, got the better of Fleeting. If the two were to meet again, Sam, obviously the question's a bit open. We don't know the conditions of a potential rematch, but in your mind, would the form be upheld?
Not necessarily. I thought Fleeting emerged as the best horse on Saturday, if I'm honest. I'm not going to knock Starcatcher because I think she's progressing at a rapid rate of knots, as is a number of these Gosden fillies, these middle distance fillies. They're all enjoying marvellous seasons, whether it be Annapurna or Mayadar or even Enable, who's en route to the King George this Saturday and before going back to the Ark. So there's there's some absolutely magnificent fillies to come out of that yard this year, of which Starcatcher is rightfully in the top half dozen. But I just thought Fleeting, given the way the race was run, given the steady pace and the steady fractions that Frankie set, for Fleeting to come off the pace and run as well as she did. Admittedly, the winner was a bit snug, and she probably could have gone again if she was being challenged wholeheartedly in the last 100-150 yards. But I thought it was a really, really decent effort from Fleeting. She hasn't had the rub of the green so far this year. She was a bit unlucky in the Oaks at big prices. She's just the kind of filly that I could see coming back for the Kitco fillies and mares at the end of the season on soft ground and winning something along that those lines. But they're both very, very talented. But I thought certainly Starcatcher benefited from a masterful ride, whereas Fleeting was just off the pace and just didn't get the rub of the green.
Certainly be very interesting to see what pans out if the pair meet again. On to Withhold then, who was another winner over the course of the last few days. Our next question, if you were in Tony Bloom's shoes, Sam, would it be the Ebor next for the big prize money, or would you go for the prestige of a group race?
Well, I think the Ebor this year, given the clamour to get into a £1 million race, will end up being almost like a group handicap.
Yeah.
There'll be literally nothing between top and bottom rated. Everything will be well over 100, you would imagine. The days of a three-year-old getting in off a light off 7-7-7 with Frankie Dettori or Franny Norton or one of these young lads riding off 7-8 are well behind us now. They're obviously higher quality handicaps featuring, you know, group pattern race performers, and Withhold certainly is entitled to be up amongst those sort of echelons. So I would think £1 million at York. You know, Tony Bloom's a sportsman. Even if it had top weight, he wouldn't be conceding that much weight. It's a bit of a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, I think plenty of people would like to see that one in the Ebor, and I think that'll probably be the likely outcome. We'll see what pans out with that. On to the Jockeys' Championship next, with Danny Tudhope extending his lead over Rasheen Murphy over the last few days. He's become the new favourite now for the title, just riding tremendously well at present. And do you think he is now the rightful favourite, Danny Tudhope? Is it his to lose at this point?
Yeah, I do, because I think, you know, Rasheen, with certain connections that he has, might well have to disappear off to France on a Sunday or wherever it may be. The back end of the campaign, he might have to go abroad a little bit more than Danny ever would. Danny can probably ride at the, too harsh about it, the humdrum midweek meetings and you know, up north and get six or seven rides. Not that Rasheen wouldn't. You know, he's at Wolverhampton on Tuesday afternoon. He's probably got a pretty decent book of rides there. I think it'll be a good head-to-head between the two. Sylvester seems to have dropped off them a little bit. PJ McDonald's in behind, but he doesn't quite have the same sort of support. And obviously, it does really demand that David O'Mara's horses remain in very good order.
Yeah.
But he's got such a vast array of horses that might well be the case. And I think you mentioned to me off air, who's not to say that, you know, a Richard Fye might throw a little bit of weight behind Danny's challenge if it, you know, push comes to shove towards the closing weeks of the season. So I think he's the rightful favourite. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant rider. Have done for quite some time. You saw that. He showcased his class and ability at Royal Ascot.
Yep.
Two winners there, you know, a Queen Anne winner and, you know, winner on a horse for William Haggis. And of course, William seems keen to use him as well. So if he sends horses north, and even if he has not horses in the south, he gets well used by William Haggis, who's got over 200 horses. So there are some pretty big industry heavyweights behind Danny Tudhope, and hopefully he can get the job done. No disrespect to Rasheen Murphy, but it'd be good to see somebody like Danny Tudhope, you know, just prove that it's not all about entitlement. Mm. You know, he's had to do it the hard way. He's ridden in 0-50s and 0-55s around Catterick for a good majority of his career. I think most of us who watch horse racing on a regular basis realise what a class act he is. So hopefully he gets it done.
On to this weekend's action then, of course, the King George being the feature this weekend and enable the feature in that race, round about the 4-6 mark at the time of recording. There were 11 of them set to take their chance in that race. Is there any taking her on at 4-6 in Able?
I think it's difficult. Obviously, Crystal Ocean is a very, very talented horse in his own right. He's won a couple of times around Ascot. He's perfectly versatile over a mile and a quarter, mile and a half. He's trained by a genius. And if you were being churlish, perhaps you might say, well, you know, Enable had a hard race at Sandown in winning the Eclipse there on very fast ground over a mile and a quarter. Could she be a little bit vulnerable just 3 weeks later? That's what you're pinning your hopes to, I think, if you're looking to back something other than her. Obviously, Anthony Van Dyke's in the race as well, Derby winner. So it does look a race for the ages with Defoe, the Coronation Cup winner and Waldgeist, you know, Andre Farb. So it looks a really, really decent race and a good Japanese horse.
Yeah, yeah.
Likely to line up as well. So let's hope we get eight runners and we get a good competitive race. But if there's any rain in and around Ascot between now and Saturday, that'll certainly play to Enable's strengths. Not that it would harm Crystal Ocean too much, but, you know, she'd be more than happy with a bit of cut in the ground as well. And, you know, she's obviously an absolute magnificent racehorse. 4-6 isn't necessarily my bag, and I'd probably just stand by and clap and watch her win. But yeah, it won't be all her own. You know, it'll be all her own way, because Crystal Ocean is a pretty formidable horse in his own right.
Mm. Yeah, looking forward to that meeting this weekend, and finally with a look ahead to next week. Obviously, we've got Glorious Goodwood and the Galway Festival. Always love this time of year having those two meetings on side by side. Any fancies for either of them next week?
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of work on Goodwood just yet, but I did have a quick look at the Lennox, and I thought it was quite interesting at this point that, you know, Hey Gaman, Librevido and Safe Voyage were sort of the joint favourites. Obviously, Librevido gives away ground at the start. He ran quite well in the Golden Jubilee. He was only beaten four lengths by Blue Point, and the seven should be perfect for him, really. He obviously won the Jersey Stakes over seven. Hagerman only ran on Saturday at the Curragh and was beaten by Romanized. Whether he turned out 10 days later is open to question. Safe Voyage, once cut in the ground, he too ran in that Curragh race and ran a brilliant race for the Quins. But, you know, whether Goodwood would really be his track or not. So I sort of sided with something like Shine So Bright, who was 6th of 19 in the Guineas, only beaten five lengths by Magna Grecia. Previously, he'd beaten Space Traveller at Newmarket, and, you know, that's a pretty decent run in one of those early season trials, the free handicap. Obviously, Space Traveller, we saw what he did at Royal Ascot, winning the Jersey Stakes, so that form looks quite solid. And Shine So Bright was placed at Goodwood in a two-year-old contest there last year, which worked out reasonably well as well, you know, the Richmond Stakes, so that proves at least that he handles the track okay. So I thought at this stage, between round about an 8 or 9 to 1 chance, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't run. This looks an absolute perfect race for him. I don't think he's got too many other entries. He's in the Sprint Cup in September, but over 7 furlongs, which looks his trip these days, he's been kept fresh for this. I would think that, you know, Andrew Balding, they won a winner at Goodwood, the King Power team, so that would be an ideal race for him to try and justify.
Good stuff. Maybe Shine So Bright one to consider then next week at Glorious Goodwood, and that's the Monday jury wrapped up for another week.
You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
So before we go any further, let's take a further look back at some of this weekend's star names. And of course, Betty's Hope winning the big race of the day at Newbury, the Super Sprint Stakes. Delighted to be joined on the line as well by William Hill Racing Radio regular James Millman to have a little chat about the horse and potentially any future plans as well. First and foremost, James, a massive congratulations. Must be great to win such a nice pot with a real bargain purchase as well. And doubly special to do it in a race that the yard must have a bit of an affinity with, having won it back in 97 with Lord Kintyre. You're almost becoming synonymous with the race.
Yeah, most definitely, Sammy. It was a brilliant day for the yard. We went with relatively low expectations. I'd say she only cost £3,000. In good form, won her last two at Chepstow and Chelmsford, but that was both over 6 furlongs, and we didn't really think she'd be quick enough. But we were aiming more for 5th and 6th prize, which is still quite a lot of money. But luckily, the rain came at Friday, and while we thought it might not be ideal to get all our forms on quick ground, everything kind of fell into place, and luckily she just got home.
Absolutely. A real bargain purchase, as you mentioned there, at only 3,000, which is a real drop in the ocean in the racing world. Who gets the credit for the acquisition, James?
My mum does, to be fair. Okay. She had a rare outing to the sales in September at Ascot, and mum and dad went up more just to see if any owner breeders didn't sell their yearlings and if they were going to send them into training. But they saw her in the ring, and because she was related to Kalachi, the dam's a half-sister to Kalachi. Dad was actually underbidder on him many, many years ago.
Right, okay.
When he went through the ring, Henry Candy ended up buying him, and he was obviously a very, very good sprinter, now a good sire. So while her immediate pedigree, that the half-brother and half-sisters aren't particularly good, there was a little bit of backlash there. So they took a chance, didn't pay very much for her, just £3,000, and mum decided to keep her for this season. And luckily, it's all worked out extremely well because she's won 143,000 now. So, as a big earner for the family.
Yeah, definitely so. Presumably, when you originally got the filly, this race wouldn't have been the immediate plan when you spend such a modest sum on the horse. But given the conditions of the race obviously mean that a filly who was a cheap purchase has a bit of an advantage at the weights. When did this race kind of come into your mind?
Well, we try to get all our two-year-olds as potential super sprint horses, because obviously we don't spend much money, unfortunately. People don't really give us the big bucks as such. And when you enter in March, all the two-year-olds that are currently ready to run early on, they all get an entry for the super sprint. But normally, they get whittled away due to either not being fast enough, not good enough, or picking up slight injuries. But luckily, she sailed through. She ran in April behind Lady Kermit at Kempton on her debut, finished second, which was a great run. Obviously, Lady Kermit then looked a potential superstar. We went to Beverly. She was second, got beat at Shorthead and a little maiden. And then she went to Sub 1 and got beat there as well. So we were slightly worried back in April, May time that she might have missed the chance to win her the race, because, like I say, she was an early foal, not particularly big, but she's kept on improving. And like I say, she's a really tough, lovely ride. She normally has me on her back at home, so carrying 10 stone plus every day, I think. When she's got to track, having 8 stone 4 and stuff, I think she's thought she's running loose.
Well, I was going to ask, because you very often suggest, tongue-in-cheek, that when the yard has a big upturn in form, it usually coincides with when you've been at home riding out. Riding two-year-olds wouldn't be always your idea of fun, though, James.
No, but Patrick did a good job of an era when she was a really young horse, so she's quite quiet. And I've been lucky enough to ride her. Most of the time, whenever I'm at home, I would ride her, and Pat rides her if I'm not there. So as you can say, she's had the best riders around. But she's a fantastic filly, and I'd say we couldn't be any more prouder of her.
Well, speaking of the best riders around, when it comes to the race itself, you've obviously managed to book SDS. Do you concoct a plan for the race? Would there have been instructions handed out, or does Sylvester get free rein when it came to race?
Well, to be fair, because we didn't think she'd be fast enough, it was just try and keep her in touch and keep on pushing, really. There wasn't a particular tactic as such. They go so fast in that race that it's more just try and keep in touch and hopefully be there at the finish. And we just said to Sylvester, aim more for 5th and 6th and keep her running on to the finish, just to try and get a bit of prize money. And luckily she's kept on going right to the end. We were lucky to get Sylvester. Initially Holly Doyle, who won on her at Chelmsford, she was going to ride, but unfortunately she was claimed by her connections to ride at Newmarket. Kieran O'Neill was next on the list, but he had to ride for John Gosden. And luckily Sylvester was free, so we didn't think we'd be able to get such a good jockey off that kind of weight, because so many trainers obviously wanting decent jockeys off lightweights in this race. We were very fortunate, and basically we were very lucky, because she was naughty in the stalls. She could quite easily have been withdrawn. She had the best draw. Other runner, Daddy's Diva, she was on the other side of the track, and she did nothing. So I think it's just very fortunate everything fell into place.
Absolutely. As we mentioned a little bit earlier on, obviously the horse purchased by your mother runs in your mother's colours. And that means that minus, of course, the jockey's take, you end up keeping most of the prize money in-house. So it's just interesting to know, James, how far that prize money will sort of go in a yard of your size.
Well, we've got very different opinions on how to spend the money at the moment, Sammy. Me and Patrick would like to go to sales and buy a few more horses, just try and build on a success. While mum and dad might have ideas of spending on something non-horse related, but it's a lot of money that hopefully can boost the family business, because obviously me and Patrick have a much bigger say in it now than perhaps what we did. And time's moving on, and hopefully it's a big upsurge in owners. It'd be nice if people would start sending us some more horses, because obviously we had a double with sufficient winning 30 grand handicap later in the card. And it would just be nice to get some new owners into the yard and hopefully boost the profile again, a little bit like when Lorcan-Tye won the race 22 years ago.
Yeah, fingers crossed that will happen. You mentioned there Sufficient, who of course brought up a double for the yard on the day, and both winning in photo finishes, James. All of us, trainers, owners, jockeys, punters, can quickly recall 5 or 10 times we've been on the wrong end of a photo finish. But to get two right in the same day, that must sort of reaffirm your faith in the luck of the world.
It does indeed, and at the start of the year, you know me, I like a good moan, Sammy, and we were losing out on quite a few narrow photo finishes with seconds. On Thursday, I think we lost out on 0-55 by a short head, and at the time, you're a little bit annoyed, but luckily the photos went our way in the really big races, and that's always a huge help. You only really remember who wins, and we wouldn't be getting, well, A, the same kind of money, but B, the same kind of publicity if she'd finished second, so it's a small margins, but luckily it went in our favour.
And a final word on Betty's Hope, James, which is what's next? Does she stay in the yard, stay in your mother's colours? Is there a next race in plan for her? Have you thought that far ahead?
There's a couple of races. Ginger Nut, who won the race last year, very similar profile. She was a filly going into the race with a few runs, wasn't rated too high. It all depends on what the handicapper does, because she's only rated 79 at the moment. I rated her about 85. I think Racing Post has said 88. So she's still got a realistic handicap mark. We'll probably stick to nurseries. There's a valuable one at Newmarket in a couple of weeks, or the Ebor meeting, which Ginger Nut actually went on to win. Long term, there's a sales race again in Newmarket in October, where I think she's only got a £6 penalty. That's worth £150,000, so she might be heading for that as a longer term target end of the season. Bit of black type would be nice, but she's done way beyond what we expected. So whatever happens, it's a bonus from now on.
Absolutely. James, thank you very much for that. An absolute pleasure, as always. And once again, a massive congratulations to all at Team Milman.
Not a problem, Sammy. Thank you very much.
On to Tuesday's action now then, and a couple of races picked out by Sam, and this will build to be hopefully quite a quick fire double, because the races run side by side. We start at Wolverhampton with the 4:15 race, which is a handicap over just shy of a mile. Tell us your selection in this, first of all.
Well, it's Atletico.
you sound resigned about that, yeah, and I understand why.
Well, you mentioned Atletico's name, and it's always accompanied by a deep sigh.
Yes.
Especially if you joined in the gamble and punted him at Beverley last week, and he did everything right again, and then found Twin Appeal up his inside, burrowing away up that far rail and landing a bit of a touch in its own right. So, you know, he's run really well on occasion this year, certainly since the middle of May. I mean, he was second to that as a Spirit at Chelmsford in a competitive handicap. He then ran behind Inner Circle at first, in a really strong time. And then last week, PJ McDonald looked to have done everything right on him, deliver him at the right time, and he still found one to beat him. He's got the blinkers on, replacing the visor for the first time. He's nicely drawn in stall two. It doesn't look a fantastic race, I've got to be honest. It's a pretty humdrum handicap at Wolverhampton. Sora Bubbs in great form, but both of his wins have come around Kempton of late. Nezar could be dangerous. Inam from the Butler camp, another from the Butler camp. You know, if there's money for him, then obviously that bears notice. But I thought Atletico had to be on the scene again. Harry Bentley riding for David Evans. You know, handicapped to have a little bit of a tilt back on the all-weather. With the blinkers on, let's hope that's the oracle for him to get his head in front.
Atletico then in the 4:15 at Wolverhampton, and then just 15 minutes later we go to Musselburgh for the 4:30, where we have a handicap there over just shy of a mile and six. We're already betting on this race at the time of recording this podcast Monday afternoon, and Percy Prosecco is the 130 favourite. Iolani 4-1, Sozian 5-1, True Romance is 15-2, Elite Icon is 15-2, Spark of War 11-1, Frame Rate is 12-1 with Kitty's Cove, Highway Robber is in the betting at 14-1. It's bigger prices for the rest of them. And in this 4:30, Sam, what's going to be the pick at Musselburgh?
Well, it looks a trappy little race, doesn't it? Percy Prosecco, Archie Watson does well on his raiding trips to Scotland, including at Musselburgh as well. But I thought I'd just take a little chance with a bit of an old stage around here, Elite Icon, who ran fourth over a couple of miles around here back in the beginning of this month behind Lever de Soleil, the Cromwell horse who's been mopping up in recent times. He's pretty useful round here over a mile six as well. He managed to win here in May. He got a beautiful ride, Elite Icon, by Phil Dennis that day, only off a mark of 48. He's off the same sort of basement mark here. It's not a race that you want to get massively involved with, but he's the type of horse that could just put his head on the line at a decent price and, you know, take his course record here to 2 from 8. He's already 1 from 7. He runs around here most of these sort of meetings in these staying races, and providing he gets a decent gallop to run at, he can be quite dangerous late on. So fingers crossed they go a good pace here, and, you know, around the 7 or 8 to 1 mark each way, there shouldn't be too much damage playing in Wynnum Place.
Elite Icon then in that 4:30 at Musselburgh goes with Sam's earlier selection of Atletico in the 4:15. Don't forget you can tune into the action live on Racing Radio. We go live at 1:50 p.m. On Tuesday for all the racing at Musselburgh and Wolverhampton in the afternoon. Then we go to Chelmsford, Ballinrobe and Southwell on a Tuesday night. All 5 meetings covered for you in full in the company of John Gibby, John Babb and Luke Elder. Sam, thank you very much for that. Pleasure as always, and good luck.
Cheers, Sam. Up the Wolves.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.